It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda in Southern California, and I have my co-host Margaret Sheldon, who's normally in Boston. And where are you today, my dear?
Well, I am talking to you from Battery Park City in the city of New York. So I'm
awesome.
Way down at the tip. If I walk out the front door and I look left, I can see the Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty. So.
Oh, my gosh.
That's where I am. Yeah.
Wonderful. Good for you. How far is that from Boston, just out of curiosity?
Well, if you leave at the right time and you don't hit rush hour, it can be done in under 4 hours. But last night, it took me about 5.5 because I left at the wrong time. So I hit rush hour in every city I drove through. So leaving Boston through Providence, through New Haven. Yeah. But it's okay. I'm here now, and it's fun. It's fun.
Well, Margaret,
so,
guess
yeah.
what I did this week?
Oh gosh, that's a broad question. I saw
I painted.
I saw that you posted that painting on your website. It was brilliant.
No,
and
not
I
that
loved
one.
The teaser. But
not
your,
that one. I actually painted two oil paintings for two commissions. Yeah.
Good. Girl, I'll see that.
Yeah.
Everyone I know is getting into their studios right now. I don't know what's happening, but it's like there's a little fire ignited. Do you know, I forget who it was. I was reading about an artist. It might have been Katie, I want to say Sweatland. I'm not sure I've got that right.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who works a lot with the group in Vermont, the Putney painters.
Right.
And, of course, and she said she had unplugged intentionally in order to paint. And it was really interesting. She wasn't returning emails. She wasn't returning phone calls. She just literally took herself out of the social scene. And she thought she'd do it for 3 months, and she extended it and said she got so much out of it, she was going to continue. And I thought,
good for her.
What an interesting thing. Yeah. I'm not there. I'm happy to be social and painting.
I am so plugged in, it's scary, Margaret. It is beyond belief. But you know what I got? You're going
to
laugh. You know what I got for my birthday?
Tell me.
I got a Fit bike, which is an exercise bike that has a permanent desk across the top. And even has these, like, carpal tunnel, like, things that you put your wrists over to use your keyboard. And literally, I can sit there and pedal and work on my blog and do everything on my computer for, like, 3 hours a day. It's unbelievable.
Well, life is good, Leslie. What can I say?
How about that?
Well done. Well done.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Well, let's introduce our guest today, since he did call long, really, really, really long distance.
Really long distance, yeah.
So our guest is Colly Whisson, and Margaret has met Colly, so we'll let you talk about that in a minute. But Colly was born and actually currently lives in Brisbane, Australia. He grew up in a semi-rural surrounding, which gave him kind of the appreciation for nature and the outdoors, enjoying every opportunity he's been given to study and appreciate its nuances. In 1985, Colly had a brief stint as a picture framer, which he now looks back upon as an excellent introduction to the art world as a young adult. After giving him all the necessary fundamentals required in becoming an artist, his father, Eric, encouraged and guarded his early artist direction, which I'm so jealous of. And Colly has long believed, quote, "It's not what you paint, but how you paint it." So true. With this in the forefront of his mind, Colly dedicated himself to developing his skills to the highest level possible. He is aiming to tell a visual story with clarity and sophistication, but is also driven to distort and abstract the image as much as possible while still maintaining a realistic image. He's deeply honored to be able to regularly hold exhibitions, tutoring appointments, judging, and demonstrations in Australia and abroad. to carry the tag as quoted, quote, one of Australia's finest impressionist painters is a great personal achievement for him. Colley's first solo exhibition at the age of 24 was a sellout, which is just friggin' unbelievable. And a very encouraging sign to launch his career, you think?
I love it.
Since then, he's had numerous solo and joint exhibitions. He's also written articles in Australia, the United States, South Africa, and international artist magazines. He is the author of two books, Creating Impressionist Landscape in Oil in 2001 and Impressionist Painting Made Easy in 2009. These books and his DVDs are both sought after by collectors, artists, and libraries nationally and internationally. Colley's aim is to share his knowledge and joy of painting with like-minded artists worldwide. Throughout his career, he's been blessed to be able to share this wonderful artistic journey with his wife and two sons. And this journey is ongoing, and he looks forward to each time he returns to the easel. Colley, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here.
It's so great to have you. And Margaret, you have to talk about the fact that you know Colley.
Well, that's right. I probably know a few things about you that you don't generally share. I will
that's a great way to start out the show.
Well, you know, if you share dinner five nights in a row and you're, you know, at least one of us was having wine, the conversation flows. And I will be general enough to say that I, just for no particular reason, I asked Colley how he met his wife, Steph, and he told the story, and I remember thinking it was one of the sweetest stories I had ever heard. And I thought, young man, get yourself home. a wife you love. I don't know how you can be here. But what an incredible person. And that's right, I took just really on a whim, and because a friend wanted to go up to Landgrove, I went up to the Landgrove Inn last fall and met Colley. And I have to tell you, that was a pretty full class, don't you think, Colley? I think we maybe had 14.
I think so. Yep, I think normally around about the 14 or 15 in most classes. It's something that it does give me great pleasure to sort of be able to sort of impart sort of my knowledge, and because I've always felt this, if I were to get to the stage where we all do one day, where we do sort of fall off the tree, so to speak, if I kept all my information sort of to myself and never shared any, it'd be a great resource loss. So I can impart as much as I can in the workshops, and Margaret's a good hard worker, and so she was a real pleasure to teach, and all going well, we will catch up again this year as well in September.
You bet. You're going to have to put up with us again. But
it'll be a pleasure.
Margaret, can you talk a little louder?
Oh, sure. Let me try. Thanks. How's that?
Oh, much better.
I've been through enough workshops, and I've done a little teaching myself, and I know how hard it is not only to communicate what you want to communicate, but to kind of reach out to everyone that's in that class. And I have to say, I thought you did an outstanding job at that. And it was one of the things that, it really did stick with me.
Yeah.
So now we're going to launch into all our questions here.
Okay.
All right. So I'll start out. Because from your bio, we know kind of a general idea of how you came into art, obviously, with your father.
Sure.
But when was it that you knew you wanted art to be your life's work?
It's funny how you learn sort of how your life works out in reverse almost. So as a kid, young sort of 4, 3 year old, we were going to exhibitions, and my father was teaching, I think, probably when I was about 4. So it was something that was always there, and I'm actually one of 7 children. So, and my father had sort of given all my older brothers and sisters a sort of a go at painting. And actually, one little thing that most people probably don't know, that I'm actually a twin as well. So,
my gosh.
So that's a lesser known little fact as well. We're not identical, we're fraternal. He's got blonde hair, so we're almost opposites. But for many years, sort of going to shows, and actually my father started painting well before I was even born. And I just found, I was actually a carpenter originally upon leaving school, and I was offered an apprenticeship. So I think I always sort of, playing soccer and cricket and golf and all these different things outdoors, I think being outdoors was always something that I just enjoyed. So upon sort of finishing my carpentry sort of apprenticeship, I realised, you know what, that really wasn't the career for me. And my father, after doing the, because he had a small picture framing business, he sort of said, oh, okay, twins, how about you come down and have a go at painting? So it kind of started half by accident. My twin brother, I think, lasted two lessons, even though he's a spitting image of my father in many ways. He's more of an engineer's mind, where I more probably have my father's sort of artistic, it's probably even slightly scientific sort of mind, where we love to analyse and try and problem solve, I guess, is probably the thing. I've always had a great love of that. So it was sort of through that that I think it sort of... And I think within 3 months, my twin brother and I, we went to New Zealand for a month to ski, and it was our first time leaving, even on a plane. So we went there and came back, and I'd been painting about 3 months, and I thought, you know what, I enjoyed the initial work that I had done. So that's when I sort of thought, you know what, and that's why I even said to my father, because he was sort of helping, like you do as a teacher, help students along physically with their work. I said, Dad, I'll take all the advice and everything you are willing and able to give, but then every mistake I make or every success I have, I'll let them be my mistakes and successes. And because if I'm going to build a career, that's what I'm going to have to do. And so, yeah, so it was almost after sort of that three-month mark, with almost blind optimism, I sort of launched myself, not sure what was really going to happen, but I think definitely sort of knowing a lot of my father's artist friends and all that. And I think that's actually probably been one of the great joys, actually, is the amount of really beautiful and wonderful people that you do get to meet in the art world. I think because we're all trying to sort of make the world a little bit better place, one painting at a time. And
sure.
So that's kind of how and when I think that the fire was sort of ignited and brought to bear.
Wow. It's so unusual in a way. I mean, we know that sometimes art seems to run in families. You know, people will often say they had an aunt or a grandparent who was a painter. But I think you're the only person that I've spoken to who's actually been able to learn from a parent, like directly from the parent painting. And
yeah. Actually, I see it kind of as a great gift. Actually, even leaving out the art side of it, to be able to spend so much time with your parent and get on really well and travel and paint and do all those things.
Right. As
but
an
even,
adult.
Even yeah. And but even just to get to know your father or mother, that was a great gift in itself.
Yeah.
And to be able to spend that time with him, that on just a pure human level, that was a wonderful gift. But actually, the other thing I'll say is my dad's cousin Ken Wisson. He's one of Australia's top avant-garde abstract painters. He actually started first in the mid 40s when he was sort of 17 or 18. Ken, I think, turned 90 just last December. And actually, I think even though his work in style is very different to mine and I think my father's, but a great sense of colour is probably the one strong thing that I think links the three of us together. And he was kind of the, even though he's only 6 years older than my father, but he's kind of the youngest of his generation and my father. So there is a generation apart, but both Ken and my father, their grandfathers were brothers. So they're fairly closely sort of, so I guess that does kind of prove a little bit of a point genetically.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately or fortunately, I'm not sure some days.
Well, on the good days, you're sure.
Yeah. So, on the bad days, it feels a bit of a curse, but
right.
you do learn to roll with those.
Wouldn't it be cool? Have you ever talked about having a joint exhibition of the three of you?
Ken lived in Italy for 35 years, and I only got to meet Ken for the first time about 5 or 6 years ago, and we had 4 or 5 hours to talk, and we went out to dinner, and funny thing was, he said, "Oh, you choose," and I said, "Well, I'm married to an Italian girl, and you've been living in Italy. Let's try and risk having an Italian meal. It's either going to be a wonderful surprise or a bit of a disaster, culinary wise." But and I think actually probably due to Ken's age, for many years, he does now live back in Australia. But it would be lovely to sort of see if there's some way that, or even if we were able to do, say, a triptych or something, a three painting, one off. And it's something actually I'm sort of close with Ken's niece. His sister-in-law sadly passed away about 2 years ago. Jill Wisson, who was a really lovely conduit initially to get us all together and. Before time does sort of get ahead of us, but Ken has work in our national galleries, state and regional galleries, so he's really done well in his career, in his field, in his discipline, so it was a great pleasure to meet him and actually find out that we're actually not that different, even though he grew up in Melbourne and spent so many years overseas. It's interesting. We do have a leaning towards politics and science and that sort of field. So the apples don't fall that far from the tree, I guess.
There you go, family ties.
So I
know that you travel a lot when you're teaching. I mean, I think you did. Did you just finish a workshop in Italy? And I know you're about to come to the States and do this, as you call it, pilgrimage.
Margaret, I can't hear you. Sorry. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, louder. I can barely hear you. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'll call back.
Okay.
Margaret?
I think she said she was going to call back, Leslie. Are you there?
I think we lost her. Yeah, we lost her. Okay, well, I'll ask the question. So I know you travel a ton.
If
you look, I think I looked at your workshop schedule, and you have like 8 workshops still in the U.S., but you've already done probably quite a few, right? Have you?
Last year I had, 18 workshops. And I thought, you know what, that might be a little too much physically. I had sort of about 3 months really sort of not doing as much work, just trying to really sort of put my feet up for just a couple of months. That was over sort of our Christmas, which is our summer. And I thought, you know what, it's going to be a busy mid to end of the year. So I mostly had time to paint once I started back. And also, actually, I was invited and asked to write about 10 articles for the International Artist Magazine and the Australian Artist, which I believe they just started the June issue of the International Artist, should have my first of these articles. So that was sort of funny. If I'm not teaching, I'm sort of finding something to keep myself busy. So I actually just got back a couple of weeks ago from South Africa, which was my first time in Africa, and that was a really sort of amazing and special experience.
It
was fantastic. The people were really hardworking, were really appreciative for me to make the trek across the Indian Ocean. But actually, it does remind me of the one thing that a good artist friend, Robert Wade, told me many years ago. He said, and he's taught in many countries and travelled to many, many more, and he said, it's amazing. There is an international language with painting. It really doesn't matter where that language is the same. There's normally the same upsides and downsides, and where actually many of the students, English was their second language, Afrikaans was their first. So it was interesting in that regard to first communicate and then make sure what the ideas were getting across. It's something that I've always had a love for geography, and I think I've loved the idea of going to somewhere new. That's why I think that was initially such a great thrill and interest to me. That's why I would love to sort of get to even more exotic destinations in the future as well.
That's fulfilling wonderful.
A lot of my sort of travel ambitions as well. So,
Margaret, why don't skip over? I'm sorry, over to number four next, just so you know
sure.
where we are. Okay sorry about
that. Yeah, now that I'm back, and I hope I'm live.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right. So here we go. I think the way that I first saw your work, Collie, was that I saw it on Facebook. And teams that I talk to will often say, there's no question, like, I found his work on Facebook. So whether you were doing a really good job posting on social media or other people picked you up and were, you know, sharing and posting, I'm kind of curious if that was intentional on your part, and whether it was or not. I'm also wondering, what else have you done? Why is it that so many Americans know about Collie Whisson?
Okay, that's a great question, actually. It was actually initially the advice from an artist friend. He said, why you can do more with your social media side, and we've been friends for nearly 13 years. He's one of my early sort of artist friends in America, and I was quite hesitant at first because I'd heard a few sort of bad things, as in, oh, you're going to have to pay, and which have now become unfounded. I've found through the whole process that, oh, you have to pay Facebook a copyright and a this and a that. And so there was a bit of trepidation at first. But I thought, you know, it's been interesting exercise. In one area I felt was that just to see, because you always have the idea, it gets put down onto board or canvas, and it's interesting just to see how that does just come across to a wider audience.
Yeah.
It's funny how we become a little insulated in our own sort of minds when we're working. So I thought this would be a great way just to see what other people think as well, good, bad, or indifferent. And I think within 7 or 8 weeks, I had 2,000 friends, and I thought, oh, this was a little more work than I expected. And I think I've sort of maxed out my Facebook followers, and that's why as of December last year, I started on Instagram. In about 6 months, we've got just under 12,000 followers. So
awesome.
It seems to have, yeah. And actually, I get a lot of advice from my wife and stuff as to, because they're looking at it a bit more externally as well, and Alex made a lovely comment the other day saying that the good thing, your growth is fairly organic. It's not sort of, you haven't had to promote things or do sort of a lot of external things. It's been a natural, organic growth, and you have a lot of interaction with your following as well, which this is all news and new stuff to me in that regard. It's been a journey that's sort of been interesting and exciting at times as well. There's been some great offers actually for teaching and for offers in the future as well for exhibitions and galleries. And actually I'm trying to find time to get some work for a gallery in Charleston, which I visited about 2 years ago. That's the one tricky part, is you get so many offers, but I've only got so much time to really fulfill all of them or some of them sometimes.
That's
it's been
a happy problem.
Yeah,
you know, Collie, you have a very distinct palette and a very recognizable style. And actually, I want to put a plug in right now for your website. If you go to Collie's website, you will never get past the front page because there's a video there that is so incredible. And it's just so fun to watch your brush strokes. And obviously, it's in one of your workshops because it starts out and you can see some students. But no, it's your artwork is spectacular.
Yeah.
But we're wondering, is the light in the Southern Hemisphere different than what we have here? Is that why you're so good?
Actually, it's interesting because I actually did write about this in an article and about the light internationally and different sort of regions of the world and even regions of, because the light is a little different from Queensland, Brisbane, where I live, to the southern part of Australia, where we're physically about the same size as the US. So we do have a lot of similarity, but also there is a subtle difference as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the palette and everything, I think that technically is fairly standard in general. There might be a few little, I use sort of phthalo green, where someone might use viridian. Someone might use terra rosa, where I use a light red ochre, which is very, very similar. Another artist friend who's a really wonderful, brilliant Melbourne watercolourist called Greg Allen. He's almost been like, with painting wise, he's almost been sort of like my big brother with advice. And he always said, as an Australian artist, we really do owe a great deal to our early school, which was named the Heidelberg School after a suburb in Melbourne, just I think about 15 to 20 miles east of the downtown Melbourne in the 1880s. He said because they were surprisingly quite so amazing and they set the bar at such a high standard that for any new or young artist coming through, the fact the bar was set quite high, or to very high, you had to be, if you wanted to make it in the field as a representational or impressionist or realist artist, you really had to work your backside off to sort of get, just to sort of make the grade. So it's probably a little bit of, we do have great light here, but my state, like Florida, I think it's called the Sunshine State. So I think that definitely, the fact it's a bit like we have a lot of great swimmers at sort of national or international level, and I think because we've got great access to water and swimming pools, I think if you have great access to
Ian Thorpe, I know him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was amazing. And so I think with and actually probably the other side of it, I think another artist friend made a great comment upon sort of some of his early trips to England in the late 80s, early 90s. In Australia, we have and probably more had, it's probably not as strong as it used to be, almost a three-tier system. So there were sort of like the, what we would call charity or school shows or Rotary, sort of Lions Rotary type shows, where it was a great place to sort of start. And then there was two or three different tiers with our gallery. So there was where you could work your way up. So there was great introductory, then middle, and then the top shelf. So it sort of gave all levels of artists an avenue to be able to pursue a career as well. So and that's actually how I started. Sort of doing those type of exhibitions. I wasn't in a gallery for the first 3 or 4 years, but upon sort of going into those, that's when I sort of got noticed by galleries and picked up by them. So it's probably not a one sort of thing solution. It's probably multi-layered, and so that's probably the main reason.
Yeah, and accessible too. You know, it sort of sounds like there's a way in for
That's it. Yeah. That's,
yeah.
And actually, I think actually that did that raise the other point that we do have a lot of really good art groups that are community sort of art groups, but also say the Royal Queensland Art Society, and then there's a Royal New South Wales and the Melbourne Victorian Artist Societies. So there's and that's after the state of Victoria. It's not in a Victorian style. So we have had a lot of small groups to it's been sort of almost the ideal environment to develop through as well.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Now, teaching, I'm curious, would you say there's a typical American sort of student artist? And I'm, to follow up with that, I'm also going to ask you, what do you think it is that makes for a great workshop? Just from your point of view as a teacher.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's
tough
a...
one.
Yeah, that is and loaded with landmines there, I think, too. So I have to be careful how I answer this.
You can be honest. We don't mind.
Yeah.
take it.
Yep, that sounds good. And I always find that the best policy because, and that's what I try and do with my teaching, is to many times you have to give a bit of bad news, but I always find it's best to start off with always with the positives, and then there's this little bit of work that we need to do, the negative side of things, and even in my own work, that's you'll find that with every artist's work, there's rarely a masterpiece. It's always every painting's a work in process, in progress.
I agree.
So I find with the students, I think the student that that's just willing to listen, the person that is willing, or student or artist that's really wanting to get something out of it, because there's always egos on the line. I've been told this by someone else, and that's perfectly fine. I think it's a matter of, for a student to get the best out of myself or any teacher really, is try and learn your weaknesses. Go and think, okay, I want to learn about colour. That's one thing that this particular artist is known for. And try and absorb, leave your ego at the door, try and become that sponge, and soak up as much information that's relevant to your journey as well. Probably the one area that I think I've learnt the most in the last 10 years of teaching in America especially as well, and teaching internationally, there's a lot of the similar things I've almost sort of, and that's actually how the articles with the international artists started, with a conversation about that. There's almost 10 different things we all do wrong, and that's with the articles. That's what I was aiming to address in the international artists. So it's either a drawing weakness, a brushwork weakness, but one of the main ones is a tonal contrast. From light to dark, that seems to be one of the hardest things that that people struggle with. But the solutions are quite easy with drawing, because there is no colour to confuse the eye, or we can't trick the viewer with a little bit of colour to make something sing, say a little bit of red in the right spot or yellow. So I see my job is to problem shoot, set in motion. Ways for them to improve in the day, but also in the week, or then my aim is in the next 3 to 12 months, so that they've got a path to improve their work as well.
For sure, yeah.
That's
very
wonderful. Now, Margaret, I think, knows that you trade paintings with many fine painters. Is this
yes.
Is this something that you plan? Is it just kind of happen on a whim? Have you been doing it for long? I mean, it's a great idea. I love it.
Yeah. Actually, Margaret's probably my perfect witness that how clumsy, how fortuitous sometimes, because it was really just pure chance with my last painting that I swapped with a really lovely painter, Charlie Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
We'd sort of met through Facebook, actually, or were introduced, I guess, to each other's work via that sort of avenue. It was advice from my father many sort of years ago. He said, if the chance ever arises, if another artist is happy and willing and interested in swapping, do it, because it is a great way to build up a collection of artist work that is like, to be able to look at them and see them, is like listening to another voice that isn't your own. But that was really where the pursuit came from, was wanting or wishing to because I only really collect paintings that or artist work that I admire. It's never for financial gain or anything or a named artist. For me, I've swapped artists that work with that are barely known but are quite brilliant. A Melbourne artist that there was a couple that he was not sure what to do with, and I said, well, I'm happy to swap, and we swapped, and his work, he uses 3-inch brushes, all this really crazy stuff. Sometimes I'm hoping to swap a painting with another artist from South Carolina. I'm not sure if I should mention any names, but Larry, if you're listening, I'm still keen.
Now we know
who
it is.
Yeah. And we're teaching in Maine, and his workshop finishes as mine starts. So if it all works out, that'd be he's another artist that I'd love to. So yes, it's part accident, part just. Actually, one of my favourite stories was it was the year before, 2016, teaching in Salt Lake City. I meant to catch up with Brian Mark Taylor. He was, and it turned out he was teaching just up north of me in Idaho and was finished. He came down, we had dinner together, we talked painting and easels, and we swapped a painting there. A lot of times it's just because a lot of the artists that I love and like and admire, they're busy as well. So sometimes they're on the road, because I was actually in San Francisco on that trip, but he was away, I was there.
It worked out.
I think he was, he was visiting his parents, and so it was perfect.
That is wonderful.
Well, it's something I think we should all start doing. If for no other reason than because it's so meaningful when you've actually had a conversation with the artist and there's something about trading. Yeah, very good.
Absolutely. Some purchase from the artist. I'm actually happy to do that. Some artist friends have just had a quiet period and weren't sort of in a position to be able to do it. So I've been more than happy to do that as well.
That's great.
So if any artists are interested, just send me a message and I'll see how we can go.
Wonderful.
That's great. I'm going to switch the next question a little bit.
Okay.
And it's because I did take a workshop from you, and I know that as you teach, you sort of do what I have called like a step-by-step demo. So you start the painting, and then you have the class kind of start the painting so that everybody can learn in increments. And I think it really works, for people to sort of observe it and then try it. But I'm curious of two things. One is that the way you were taught? And secondly, have you tried any other teaching methods and settled on this? Or is this just like what is your natural style?
Sure, yep. Actually, that is an intriguing question, actually. Because I'm always sort of looking for different approaches, and that's why I do. We'll really look forward to the day when we can be set up with sort of iPad or some type of good sized device, web camera on my painting, so everyone gets the front row seat, the best seat in the house. So that's one area that I'm hoping to be able to go to eventually. Before I sort of were in my early 20s, I would go with my father to workshops in the country, and partly as a helper to unload this and unload that and set this up and set that up. And if there was ever a chance to if then the group didn't mind, I would go right at the back and just follow along with the painting. And that's when I saw, I thought, you know what, I've learnt so much. I'm only sort of been painting 2 years myself. And boy, look at how successful, how much I learnt and how successful my painting was. I thought, you know what, that's, and so far I've seen sort of the idea of just doing a complete demonstration, but that to me is a lot of information in one go. So there are little areas, that's why I like to give everyone a reference photo and so that they can also see where we're aiming to get to and to see where the overall drawing will go to. And but now I'm always sort of on the looking at new things and different things. But so far I found the step-by-step tends to work really well. With the plein air work, I do more the demonstration approach because the light change. Yeah, the light changes in that hour and a half. So it's really just get down as much, show the process, and then everyone gets stuck into it. And that's really actually, I do love the plein air days as well, whether it's in Europe, Australia, or America. There's so much great sort of subject matter in a lot of the places I go to. So that's good to sort of step outside and do that as well.
Yep.
Well,
very
speaking
cool.
of your workshops, Collie,
yeah.
Okay, I know you're coming to California, but you've got
That's
eight
correct.
Scheduled in the U.S. Do you want
yep.
to mention the cities? Do you want me to?
Sure. Oh, no, actually, I can do a quick little rundown.
Perfect.
Actually, the four in the East Coast, there's only a waiting list on those, and that's...
I saw that.
I'll do reverse order. Maine, Atlanta, North Carolina, and Vermont, back to Vermont at Landgrove Inn.
Yeah.
But I believe, for some reason, actually, it's funny, normally they sell out the opposite way because of where I start first. But then there's San Mateo, which is about 30, 40 minutes south of San Francisco. Then I go up to Bainbridge Island, which is just off Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I was there last year, and that was a really fun workshop. And then I go down to St. George in Utah, which will be part sort of indoor, part outdoor. Thankfully, we've got it'll be August, but there's a lovely thing called Pine Valley that we go. It's up another 1,000 feet or 2,000 feet, so it's cool for outside painting. And then I go to Bend, Oregon, for the last of the West Coast. And I do know there are a couple of spots there, I know we've just done a little bit more publicity, and once that sort of normally kicks in, they normally do start to fill up. And so if people want to either jump on my website, that normally has the most inclusive information and detailed information for everyone. So, yeah, so no,
well,
I'm looking forward
to it.
I
want to mention Italy 2019, if I may.
Yes.
Because this sounds crazy unbelievable. It is May 18th through 30th, and it's 13 days of painting and exploring in, are you ready for this, Tuscany and the Amalfi Coast. Wow.
Yeah.
I can't
yeah.
imagine what that's going to be like.
Yeah. Actually,
Steph will be there.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Your wife will be there. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
What were you
going to
say,
yes.
Collie?
Oh, yes. Actually, the one thing I was... with Stephanie, my wife, coming along, that's because it'll be her first time returning to Italy since she was an 18-month-old and moving to Australia as sort of almost a toddler. So that just in itself will be exciting for me
to
set foot back on her birthplace. And we're aiming after the workshop to actually go to the town, which is on the East Coast, Pescara, that region where she was born and first sort of set foot on Italian soil to be able to return for that. That's really good because actually I've already been to Pescara actually with my mother-in-law actually. About 4 or 5 years ago, my older son and I, we chaperoned my mother-in-law for 30 days to catch up with her family and cousins and all that sort of stuff. So most people thought this was a little unusual that that a son-in-law was going with the mother-in-law. But we get on great with my Maria, my mother-in-law, and But with the actual teaching side of things, I was fortunate that to be asked, where do you want to go? You choose. And so these places are familiar to me, but also I really love these areas. I've actually painted in both areas. This time we'll have more time to really explore, because normally I was only there sort of 2 or 3 days, and it's then move on to the next town almost before you sort of get to really see as much as you'd like. It's going to be a wonderful experience, and I believe already 3 or 4 people have already signed up. And with other people, with sort of nearly 12 months still to go, or 11 months, that's exciting. That people are really thrilled to come along as well. So it'll be my 3rd teaching in Italy as well. So I'm starting. We're looking at doing all the pre-planning. Yeah. So now it's all coming together nicely. So now that'll be fun.
Cool.
Wonderful.
All right. I'm going to get right into you as a painter for a second, and I'm just wondering if you would describe for us a typical day when you're home in Brisbane and you're actually painting.
Okay. I'm not a super early riser, but I wouldn't say I'm a late riser. But one of the best bits of advice I think I was given by a gentleman who has been sort of my mentor for nearly 30 years. Sadly, we lost him about 18 months ago. Very good friend of my father. And he said Rembrandt didn't wait for half the day to go by before he started painting. He would start as soon as he could in the day. And when he was physically, mentally at his strongest. So I thought, you know, that is great advice. So in general, I've always tried to start as early in the day as possible. As we were talking about before, it seems the more successful you get, the more requests you get. So by the time we sort of do emails and all that sort of stuff, that on some days can delay things a little bit. And also by doing an online course as well, which is actually proven now after 12 months of doing, nearly 12 months of doing it, as a great little warm-up for when I start painting as well, because I'm analysing work sort of normally between sort of 7 and 8.30 in the morning, and then I'll be in the studio by sort of 9 if I'm working on sort of work for galleries internationally or an exhibition. To a degree, as unflattering as it sounds, I try and sort of think of it as a normal job, trying to get as many hours in, whether I'm picking up a brush at 9 or 9.30 in the morning. So I do try and work as disciplined and as routine as possible as well. I think for me that works the best. I've had artist friends who don't start painting till 8 o'clock at night.
I couldn't do that.
Yeah, me either. They're real night people, and they'll work to 2 in the morning. I prefer this way so that I'm using all that fresh energy from the sleep the night before. So that seems to be what's worked the best for me.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. That is amazing. So, question. I know you talked a lot about the other artists in your family, but is the Australian gallery scene really different from the ones in Europe or the U.S., or do you think they're very similar? I'm just curious.
That's a really interesting question as well. I would say very similar. Framing style,
okay.
Probably the differences may be just framing styles. But in general, I think it's been a process that has worked for many years, even though I have noticed in the last 10 years that the actual gallery system probably isn't working as well it did, say, through definitely the 80s and 90s and into the 2000s. It seems
probably
to be
because of the internet. I'm sure it is.
I think it's actually probably a number of factors. that there were a big boom, I noticed, in Australian artists, especially in the 60s and 70s. So then with that boom of artists, there came a boom of good and great galleries. And I think a lot of those galleries were trading and selling art from the late 70s or even early 80s right up until now, and some are still going. And so I think sometimes it's just been a bit of an evolutionary thing that they've either just decided to retire and wanted to leave the business there and then. I think definitely throw in the internet, but also I think with the 2008 sort of global sort of financial sort of situation, every time we've since, say, the early 80s, the early 90s, September 11, 2001,
mm-hmm. there
seems to be a jolt financially, politically, and the things just shift a little bit. And some people would prefer to buy a big flat-screen TV for $3,000 and have it devalue in 18 months to barely $500 than buy a painting that will normally increase in value or
mm-hmm.
at least maintain. So sometimes there's a little bit of a shift in people's thinking as well. It's a very similar but with slight differences.
Do you think the gallery scene is the same in Australia as it is in the US? And that it's kind of struggling and different and
yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. It does seem to ride financial security, political stability.
Sure.
As much as we don't want to think of those terms, but I think the one thing that I have noticed is that the strongest artists, the better artists, the smarter artists are the ones that have not only survived but have thrived. And I think I kind of embraced what was happening and thought, you know what, this is only making me work harder, think smarter. That will only be a good thing in the long run. And I think it has made me sort of really sort of think about, because if you're sending a painting across the Pacific, I want it to be a strong painting. If I'm sending a painting to Melbourne, which is, say, about 18 to 20 hours drive for it to be transported, I want it to be strong work. And then that rubbed off and I think that's just rubbed off on all of my work that, you know what, you can't sort of just sit back and, I can rest on my name or on this subject popular or something. I've had to make sure every painting is my best painting or the best painting you can sort of do in that day or that moment or in that period.
So, Kali, what advice do you have for artists who want to paint like you? Who are going to look at your work and say, oh, I want to paint like that.
Okay.
What's the big secret?
I always say to sort of some people, if you want to get a good kickstart, is to come to 1 to 3 workshops over sort of that 18 months to 2 years
uh-huh.
period. So, and then you think, okay, and then go on to another artist. Try not to sort of go, a little bit of watercolour, a little bit of oil, or 3 or 4 different teachers in 6 months, because sometimes it can confuse your ideas. And I think probably study, I think that was a very, very strong component,
yeah.
I think, to my process. The gentleman that I mentioned earlier, who was a great mentor, Terry Gawthorne, he would loan me paintings because he had a marvellous collection of about 150 paintings, and he would loan me paintings that were sort of sometimes worth $1,000 to $10,000 for a week or two. He said, oh, just when you're coming back, and we'd normally catch up once a week at this stage. And so I think the study side of things is very important. And I think the best question I learned to ask was, what made that particular painting work? Was it the subject? Was it the contrast of tone? Asking those questions of myself, and then I would transfer that onto the subject. This is a subject. What will make this subject work? Is it the shapes? Is it the boats that may be
mm-hmm.
in front of me? Is it the play of light?
That's right.
So I think definitely And actually, that was actually just going back to one of the earlier questions was that about sort of teaching and all that. Information, education is really a strong part of it, but the other part is inspiration. And I think that's probably what my father did extremely well, because he's still actually teaching today. He's 84 going on 85.
Oh, my gosh.
Trying to give up teaching, but from our last conversation just a couple of weeks ago, he's still teaching one session a week. And but he really did inspire me, but also I could see that with the students. And that's probably a component that I want for people to see the joy, the possibilities that you can get. I either sing, actually, because I do have YouTube, about 25 YouTube clips. We have the online, if you want to really sort of get more into the serious stuff with Tucson Art Academy online. So there's many sort of ways, but definitely it's a good work ethic, getting the right information, and then practice, setting that. And I think that's the one thing many people probably do. Painting well is a bit like getting yourself fit, whether it's walk fit, swim fit, any sort of even paint fit, doing it often enough that you're physically and mentally able to cope with the rigors of the day. We have quite hot, long hot summers, and the humidity can get to you. I deliberately don't have air conditioning in my studio, deliberately to make it an exercise in I'm not one for punishing myself.
Which
but
was probably really bad a couple months ago because you guys had really bad weather. It was
yeah,
really hot.
Yeah.
That's called
yeah, yep, and that's why actually normally when I finish, it's a matter of cold showers and then hop into the air conditioning to try and recuperate a little bit. But
no pain,
but we're,
no gain.
And so long as that we don't dangle the carrot too far in front of us that it seems impossible to, we want the possibility just in front of us far enough that we can almost taste it but not quite, and that keeps us hungry for sort of new paintings and new ideas.
I'd still have air conditioning.
Yeah, me too.
So now here comes some quicker questions, and let's see how you feel about these. Is there any material or art supply, sort of anything that you miss that you can only find in Australia?
Thankfully, my paints are available worldwide, and they're archival paints, which are available actually through Dick Blix. So actually that gives me the freedom to have my paints everywhere I travel. I get brushes from England and especially the from Rosemary & Co. The only one piece that is my palette knife, and then even now, in the last 5 or 6 years, they've become unavailable, even in Australia. It was actually a palette knife made in Japan. There was never a maker's name on it. There was only a small little stamp, and I would always joke that these are that good that I'm sure that these are the little offcuts that the samurai swordsmen, that when they're making the swords, this little offcut has been made into these palette knives because they were beautiful. And I'm still got my last one, and I travel with another one just in case this one, because it will break at some stage. But so that's probably the only sort of little thing that I think, oh boy, I'm yet to find. I believe there's an Italian maker, but I just haven't been able to. Which I believe Richard Schmid uses, which I haven't been game to ask him direct, or Nancy direct, which actual palette knife maker it is. That's the only little thing that I normally sort of get a little stuck on if I'm away.
So we have these questions, Collie, that we ask at the end of every interview. So
sure.
A lot of your artist friends have answered the same ones. And they can typically
sure.
They're like one word answers, very quick. But the
okay.
First one is, do you have a favorite pink color?
Cadmium orange.
Oh.
Ah. I did not see that coming.
Okay.
How about your favorite art book?
Favorite art book, Richard Schmid Paints the Landscape. That was probably, because my father actually had found his work in the early 80s. So when I started in 86, there was his book and a lot of the Australian artists. But I think even though my work is almost polar opposites, Richard's more of a tonalist, where I'm probably more of a colourist by heart. But I think I admired his technical ability and his approach to painting, his discipline.
Of course. He's amazing.
So I'm fortunate to actually have all of these books from the early ones to the more recent ones. So now he's been, it's almost become a Bible, I think, for most artists, especially his Alla Prima, Everything I Know About Painting.
Mm-hmm.
Great artist.
Is there an artist you wish you could actually study with, dead or alive?
Richard Schmid, he definitely would have.
I figured that's who it was going to be.
Yeah, but probably
say,
the other one.
I probably
got two. Because for Richard Schmid, it'd be more for technical advice, and the other one would be an Australian painter of yesteryear, Sir Arthur Streeton. He's our greatest recognised landscape painter. Unfortunately, at the tyranny of distance, he probably never really made a name for himself in England when he was living there. And he did have an exhibition in New York in terrible timing, 1926, just before the Great Depression. But he would be the other person that if... that's why it's a shame there wasn't any video equipment when these artists in sort of all those great impressionist painters. I always lament the fact that, boy, we're so fortunate, and that's why we do, I think, have a responsibility to try and record as much. And I said to my son, we should start to record a lot of information and keep it for students and other artists for future, that once I'm gone, you can sort of just have stuff that you can release posthumously. That hopefully people will gain from as well. But no, Richard Schmid Sir Arthur Streeton. I really do suggest if no one's ever heard of Sir Arthur Streeton, and you really probably do. Actually, Margaret, when you do come to Sydney, State Gallery in New South Wales you've got to see his work in person, because most of them are very big. But that's why I'm actually hoping to stay on a couple of days after the Vermont workshop and either catch up with a few artist friends there. And I would love to meet Nancy and Richard, but I'm too shy and too nervous to have
ever asked. I'll call them for you. No problem.
Here's what I'm just saying. Don't worry. We can make that.
That would be... that would be a lifelong goal, actually. Fulfilled.
We can do that.
That'd be lovely, because I have a few other heroes: Roy Orbison with music, and Pelé with soccer.
Yeah, you can't meet Roy Orbison. Too late.
He's been one of my other great influences. His vocal ability and songwriting and stuff. And we've lost Pelé's still alive, but. He's a very busy in Brazil, but no. If that were possible, that would be just a.
We're
going to
make that happen.
That would be lovely.
I promise.
But
try to make that happen.
Ultimately, I don't mind admiring from a distance as well.
So, Leslie, I'm going to let you finish this up with the obvious question, which would be whether or not number six is Orbison, the way he goes.
I'm sorry. I was going to ask, is there any music that you listen? Is there any music that you listen to when you're painting? Just curious.
Yeah, actually, definitely Roy.
There you go. I love it.
Yeah. Yep. Actually, and I think when I paint, whether I'm going for my darkest dark or my lightest light, I'm trying to mimic his highest note, that crescendo that he gets. When he hits that highest note, that's how pure and how clean or accurate and how amazing that I'm
yeah.
trying to get in a painting, either that edge or... So I'm translating the love of his voice. And it's funny, I've been listening to his music since... Because I think my mum was the big fan first. And I think I just have the same ear. So mum would play it when in the late 60s, early 70s. And as a 4 or 5 year old, I think, oh, I like that sound. Not sort of sure who it actually was. But I just started
wonderful.
Listening. Because, yeah, listening to it when I started painting. And but no, no. So no, no. He's,
well, that's
that
wonderful.
Boy.
Yeah,
you know,
that's fantastic.
It's been a great pleasure.
Well, Collie, we want to thank you so much for being our guest on the show today. Unfortunately, we're out of time, and I know it's Thursday morning there and Wednesday afternoon here and Wednesday evening where Margaret is.
New
it's
York,
a miracle we
yeah,
all got on
yeah.
the phone at the same time. But seriously, thank you so much. And once again, we appreciate it, and good luck with all your travels for the rest of
no
our summer.
Kidding. And Collie, I'm gonna work on that connection. We'll see what we can do.
That'd be fantastic, Margaret. And thanks very much,
thank
Leslie
you.
As well. And Margaret, it's been a great pleasure, and it's been fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Terrific.
Right.
Thank you.
I will be seeing you soon. Okay.
Bye.
Fantastic. Look forward to it, Margaret. You there, Leslie?
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.